Om Ajnatvinanda Sajana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Sumilatan Jaina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jaina Uttale Sayam Bhagadamayam Tadati Sapandantikam Vansa Kaupatrubhyascha Pipasindu Vaivasa Patitanam Pamanevyo Vaisvaya Namaha. We've completed the 11th chapter of the 9th canto quite a few months ago. And that chapter, as well as the chapter before that, discussed the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, the king of Ayodhya. Yes. Now we will hear his descendants, and if Krishna allows, we'll read two chapters today, 12 and 13. So there's many names, and just know that each of these descendants of Lord Ram in this dynasty were very powerful. And they lived for many years. And just see how quickly time passes. So Sukadeva Goswami said, the son of Ramachandra was Kusha. The son of Kusha was Atiti. And the son of Atiti was Nishada. And the son of Nishada was Nabha. The son of Nabha was Pundarik. And from Pundarik came a son named Chemadhanva. How many generations was that? In just one verse, so many hundreds and hundreds of years passed. And during each one of those kings' lifetimes, he did so many things. He ruled. He grew up. Before he ruled, he grew up. He was born. He grew. He had his family, he had his education, he married, had children, ruled the kingdom, met successes, met difficulties, grew old, and then he left this world, and a new king came. He was born, he grew, he was educated, he was trained, he took over the kingdom. So many important things happened during his reign. Good things, bad things, successes, failures. He conquered. He grew old. And he died. And another king took over. And that other king was married, had children, had his successes and failures. In this way, time just goes on and on and on. The son of Chemandanva was Devanika. Devanika's son was Aniha. Aniha's son was Pariyatra, and Pariyatra's son was Balashtala. The son of Balashtala was Vrajanava, who was said to have been born from the effulgence of the sun god. The son of Vrajanava was Sagana. And his son was Vidriti. The son of Vidriti was Hiranyanabha, who became a disciple of Janmani Rishi. Janmani Rishi was a great sage. He was the originator of the Karma Mamangsa philosophy, one of the six darshans of philosophy in the Vedic culture. Karma Mamangsa, complete acceptance of the Vedas. The son of Vrajanab, even though he was said to have been born from the effulgence of the sun god, he had a son, his name was Sagana, and his son, so he passed, and he passed. Vidriti, the son of Vidriti was Hiranyabha, who became, this is similar names even, because time just pushes and pushes and pushes. We like it. we don't like it, some changes we don't like, some changes we do like, but it's irrelevant. Time just it changes, it forces change. According to our karma, one thing happens or another, good or bad, but time is just pushing. This Haranyana became a disciple of Jaimini Rishi, and he became a great acharya of mystic yoga. It was from Haranyana that the great saint Yajnavalkya learned the highly elevated system of mystic yoga known as Adhyatma Yoga, which can loosen the knots of material attachment in the heart. Indeed, just by hearing about the passage of time of all these great kings, the attachment that we have to the material world, that also gets loosened. Because why? We see that everything passes, the good and the bad. Everything is temporary. I like this situation, I don't like this situation. Will pass. The son of Haranyanab was Pushpa, and the son of Pushpa was Dhruvasandhi. The son of Dhruvasandhi was Sudarshan, whose son was Agnivarna. The son of Agnivarna was named Sigra, and his son was Maru. Having achieved perfection in the power of mystic yoga, Maru still lives in a place known as Kalapgram. At the end of Kali Yuga, he will revive the lost Surya dynasty by begetting a son. So this person named Maru, he doesn't die. He has a specific function to play, because these great kings were powerful members of the Surya dynasty. And at some point in Kali Yuga, the Surya dynasty ends. There's no more descendants. And this Maru's job, he still remains alive to this day. His job is to begin again the Surya dynasty by begetting children. Prabhupada's purport. At least 5,000 years ago, Srila Sukadev Goswami ascertained the existence of Maru in Kalapagram. Where? Where does he live? Gram. It's a village. I think it's in the Himalayas. Would continue to exist until the end of Kali Yuga, which is calculated to continue for 432,000 years. Such is the perfection of mystic power. By controlling the breath, the perfect yogi can continue his life for as long as he likes. So this is a way, through yoga, to break this cycle of becoming something, then dying, then leaving a son, and then he becomes something and he dies. And then he has a son, and his son becomes something, and he dies. This is a way to break the cycle of birth and death. It is mechanical. It is called yoga. So one, through the practice of yoga and breath restraint, can remain alive for thousands of years. And here is the example of Maru. Sometimes we hear from the Vedic literature that some personalities from the Vedic age, such as Vyasadeva and Aswatthama, are still living. Here we understand that Maru is also still living. We are sometimes surprised that a mortal body can live for such a long time, thousands and thousands of years. The explanation of this longevity is given here by the word Yoga Siddhi. If one becomes perfect in the practice of yoga, he can live as long as he likes. The demonstration of some trifling yoga siddhi does not constitute perfection, like some people can, through their powers, produce some ash or some gold or can do this or do that. But this isn't the perfection of yoga, Prabhupada's explaining. It's a little like a magic trick. Here is a factual example of perfection, a yoga siddhi, siddha. One who is perfect in yoga can live for as long as he likes. This is powerfulness. And of course, through Krishna consciousness, through bhakti yoga, the soul itself becomes situated in its eternal position and lives forever. Where? Where will the soul live forever? Where does the eternal soul live forever? What place? Kalapagram? Do all the souls who are perfected go to Kalapagram? Where do they go? Anyone know? Yes, the spiritual world. Which place in the spiritual world? They can go to Vaikuntha, or they can go to Krishna Loka. Where would you like to go? Yeah? Not Krishna Loka? Maybe. Maybe, okay. When you make up your mind, let me know, okay? From Maru was born a son named Prasusruta. From Prasusruta came Sandi, from Sandi Amarashan, from Amarashan a son named Maheshan, from Maheshvan Vishwabahu took his birth. From Vishwabahu came a son named Prasenajit, from Prasenajit came Takshaka, from Takshaka came Brihadbal, who was killed in a fight by your father. Now who is Sukadeva Goswami speaking to? Maharaj Prickett. So who? So he, this king was killed by Maharaj Prickett's father. And who is that? Abhimanyu, yes. Thank you. All these kings in the dynasty of Ikshaku, this is the Sun dynasty, have passed away. That means tens and tens and tens of kings have passed away, generations. And during the time that these kings were alive, thousands and millions of people were in this world, and they've also passed away. Millions and billions of people, and they've passed away. Now, how many people are alive on earth, do they say?
Today,
6 billion. In 100 years, how many of those 6 billion will still be alive? Not very many. You'll probably be able, maybe 24, maybe 21, maybe none. Who knows? Maybe 27. One doesn't know. What to speak of, how there's, say, 6 billion human beings on the planet right now. How many living entities altogether, counting the birds and the beasts and the bugs and the fish and the worms and the trees and the ants? There's about 1 billion ants living in my backyard. How many of them will be alive in 100 years? Billions and 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 billions of living entities during this time passed away, took their birth, huh?
The last number.
Too many, yes? Such a large number. They've passed away. Now please listen as I describe the kings who will be born in the future. From Bihabala will come Brihadran. The son of Brihadran will be Urukriya, will have a son named Vitsavrita. Vitsavrita will have a son named Prativyoma. Prativyoma will have a son named Banu, from whom Divaka, a great commander of soldiers, will take birth. Thereafter, from Divaka will come a son named Sahadev, and from Sahadev, a great hero named Brihadasva. From Brihadasva will come Banuman, and from Banuman will come Pratikasva, and from Pratikasva will be Supratika. Thereafter, from Supratika will come Marudev, from Marudev Sunakchatra, from Sunakchatra Pushkar, from Pushkar Antariksha, the son of Antariksha will be Sutapa, and his son will be Amritajit. So in the future, in the past, so many living entities, humans, non-humans, kings, beggars, wealthy persons, warriors, great sportsmen, actors, musicians, scholars, billions took their birth and then left. And then in the future, billions will take their birth and they too will pass. So what effect does knowing this have? One should become detached. From Amritajit, he will come a son named Brihadraj. From Brihadraj will come Barhi. From Barhi will come Kritanjay. The son of Kritanjay will be known as Rananjay, and from him will come a son named Sanjay. From Sanjay will come Sakya. From Sakya will come Subodha. From Subodha will come Langal. From Langa will come Prasenajit, and from Prasenajit Chudraka. From Chudraka will come Ranaka. From Ranaka will come Surata. From Surata will come Sumitra, ending the dynasty. This is a description of the dynasty of Brihadbala. The last king in the dynasty of Ikshaku will be Sumitra. After Sumitra, there will be no more sons in the dynasty of the sun god, and thus the dynasty will end. And then Maru will start it again. So that's the end of the 9th canto, 12th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Dynasty of Kusha, the son of Lord Ramachandra. Now, we'll hear about the dynasty of King Nimi. Now listen to this. Interesting little pastime here, with some purports by Srila Prabhupada. How many purports did we read in the last chapter? How many? I think there was one. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, after beginning sacrifices, Maharaj Nimi, the son of Ikshaku, also in the Ikshaku dynasty, but a different line. So he began some sacrifices, and he requested the great sage Vashishta. Now Vashishta is mentioned so many times in this 9th canto. A great, powerful Brahmin priest sage. So Maharaj Nimi requested Vashishta, and he was the priest of Lord Ramachandra, of Dasarath, I believe. So he said, please, Maharaj Nimi said, Vashishta, you become the chief priest of this sacrifice. At that time, Vashishta replied, my dear Maharaj Nimi, I've already accepted the same post in a sacrifice begun by Lord Indra. So he said, I can't do it. I can't do it right now because I already have accepted the same post with Indradev. I have to perform a sacrifice with Indradev, but don't worry. I shall return here after finishing the jagya for Indra. Kindly wait for me until then. Maharaj Nimi remained silent. And Vashishta began to perform the sacrifice for Lord Indra. So when Vashishta Muni asked Maharaj Nimi to wait for him, I'll become the priest, but after some time, what did Maharaj Nimi reply? He didn't say anything. So one can say that silence means I agree, but he actually didn't explicitly say, yes, I will wait. Maharaj Nimi, being a self-realized soul, he considered that this life is flickering. We've heard about one king after the next, 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 passing away. So does that give us a feeling that life is very short? Yes. So Maharaj Nimi had this understanding. He was self-realized. He understood that life is so short. Therefore, instead of waiting long for Vashishta, he began performing the sacrifice with other priests. Prabhupada's purport. Short purport. Chanakya Pandit said, Shariram Chana Vidvansi Kaupanta Staino Guna. The duration of one's life in the material world may end at any moment. But, if in this life one does something worthy, that qualification is depicted in history eternally. So this is one way of becoming eternal. It is not a very high way. By doing something wonderful, everyone remembers you. And they talk about you years and years and years after you leave this world. Ordinary people are forgotten in 5 years, 2 years, 10 years. Great people are remembered for 20 years, 30 years. Great, great, great people are remembered for 100 years or 200 years or 300. Great, 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 great people are remembered for maybe thousands of years. So that remembrance is a type of eternality, says Chanakya Pandit. But that is not the, of course, the ultimate way to become eternal. The ultimate way to become eternal is to go back to Krishna Loka. Because what is the use if you are remembered for hundreds and hundreds of years, your name is remembered, and they say, oh, he was such a great, oh, Gautam was such a great, great carpenter. Are you going to be a carpenter? No, I don't think so. You are, okay. But then what happens if you become a monkey in your next life? And for hundreds of years they're remembering you as a great carpenter, but and you can't even get enough bananas to satisfy you. Now he's the one who's, okay, now you're pointing at him. Okay, getting even because he pointed at you before. Okay. So that's one type of eternality, but it is not a very satisfying one because it's only your name. It's not the soul, not you. Here, Prabhupada continues, is a great personality, Maharaj Nimi, who knew this fact that life is very short and you have to do something worthy in this life. In the human form of life, one should perform activities in such a way that at the end he goes back home, back to Godhead. That is self-realization. So he was a great king, very wise, and he understood this. What was his name? Maharaj? Maharaj? You remember his name? Nimi. Maharaj Nimi. So after completing the sacrificial performance for King Indra, the spiritual master Vasishtha returned. And he found that his disciple, Maharaj Nimi, had disobeyed his instruction. He had told him to wait, but he continued using other priests to perform the sacrifice. Thus Vasishtha cursed him, saying, may the material body of Nimi, who considers himself learned, immediately fall. He cursed him to die. Text 5. For unnecessarily cursing him when he had committed no offense, Maharaj Nimi counter-cursed his spiritual master. He became angry. You've cursed me to die? Well, this is what I say. For the sake of getting contributions from the King of Heaven, Maharaj Nimi said, you have lost your religious intelligence, therefore I pronounce this curse. Your body will also fall. Prabhupada's purport. The religious principle for a brahmana is that he should not be greedy at all. In this case, however, for the sake of more lucrative remunerations from the King of Heaven, Vasishtha neglected Maharaj Nimi's request on this planet, and when Nimi performed the sacrifice with other priests, Vasishtha unnecessarily cursed him. So it was a very extreme reaction from Vasishtha Muni. When one is infected by contaminated activities, his power, material or spiritual, ceases. Although Vasishtha was a spiritual master of Maharaj Nimi, because of his greed, he became fallen. So after Maharaj Nimi cursed him, Vasishtha Muni. Maharaj Nimi, who was expert in the science of spiritual knowledge, he gave up his body. He died himself just by his own will. said, okay, you've cursed me to die? Okay, I'm dying. Goodbye. Vashishtha, the great-grandfather, gave up his body also. But through the semen discharged by Mitra and Varuna when they saw Urvashi, he was born again. Now, remember, there was a sacrifice being performed by the priests. And Maharaj Nimi was the head of the sacrifice, and priests were performing it. And when Vashishtha came back, Vashishtha became angry and said, I curse you to die, to Maharaj Nimi. And Maharaj Nimi said, I curse you to die. Then Maharaj Nimi died, and then Vashishtha died. They both died, but the sacrifice was still going on. So during the performance of the yajna, the body relinquished by Maharaj Nimi was preserved in fragrant substances. It was kept very fresh, embalmed like that. And at the end of the Kshatriya Yaga, at the end of the sacrifice, the great saints and brahmanas made the following request to all the demigods assembled there. So they saw that all the demigods were there, and they had been pleased. So when someone is pleased, then you ask him for something, and then they'll bestow it upon you. So they asked the demigods for a special favor. They said, if you are satisfied with this sacrifice, and if you are actually able to do so, kindly bring Maharaj Nimi back to life in this body. The demigod said yes to this request, but Maharaj Nimi said, please do not imprison me again in a material body. Amazing, yes? Because we're hearing how one king after another king after another king after another king after another king leaves his body, dies, installs his son, and his son dies, and his son died, and his son, and his son, and his son. And suddenly we think, oh no, when we hear all this, whether we're young or we're old, we hear, oh no, I'm going to also die, and we become frightened. Until we quickly think of something else to distract us. It's very frightening to think that everything that I know in this world, everything that is mine, is going to be left behind. I'm going to die. My very body is going to die, going to ashes, or be buried somewhere. But look at Maharaj Nimi. When given the opportunity to go back into the body, he said, no, why should I be imprisoned again? His realization was so deep. What was his realization? It was his self-realized soul. He was realizing. He knew he wasn't his body. He was eternal. If one knows one's eternal, one won't become frightened by death. One won't become attached to the body. So how deep was his realization? Like the great Western philosopher, Socrates. Did you ever hear of Socrates? Did you? I know everyone else did. Did you? Yes, Socrates. His student was Plato. But Socrates, he was causing trouble by speaking truth in the city of Athens in Greece. And they brought some criminal charges against him. He was sentenced to death by drinking some poison. What was the poison called? Everyone probably knows. What was the poison called? Hemlock. So he would have to drink this. So I heard Prabhupada actually mention this on a tape just today, a lecture in 1966. So the judge said to him, after you go, after you die, where should we bury you? And he said, first you will have to find me to bury me. Or as Prabhupada said, first you'll have to catch me. What did he mean by that? What did this philosopher mean? First you will have to find me before you can bury me. He meant that I'm a soul. I'm eternal. I'm not the body. Yes, the hemlock will kill my body, but I shall live forever. I will go on to another body. So you want to bury my body? You bury it wherever you want. I don't care. As for burying me, you can't even see me. What to speak of burying me? You don't know who I am. I'm eternal. So was he a great philosopher, actually? So realized, and he drank it. Okay. I'll die. The body will die. I will live forever. Very deep realization. Fearless. Not just philosophy, a realized soul, practically. So Maharaj Nimi, he said, I don't want to be imprisoned again in the material body. I'm free. I'm free from the body. We think body is the most wonderful thing. Oh no, I might have to die. We will die. At least the body will die. But Maharaj Nimi said, I don't even want to be in a material body. So deep. So he continued speaking. Text 9. Mayavadis generally want freedom from accepting a material body because they fear having to give it up again. But devotees whose intelligence is always filled with the service of the Lord are unafraid. Indeed, they take advantage of the body to render transcendental loving service. Prabhupada's purpose. It's a little long, so I'm going to read it a little slowly. Please listen. Maharaj Nimi did not want to accept a material body, which would be a cause of bondage. Because he was a devotee, he wanted a body by which he could render devotional service to the Lord. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Janma bi more iccha yada tora Bhakta grihe jani janma mora ki. I don't know how to sing this one right. Bole, bolun. Kita janma hao yata tu yadasa. What's the next line? That was the line just before in this. Okay, yes, but good. Thank you. My Lord, if you want me to take birth and accept a material body again, kindly do me this favor. Allow me to take birth in the home of your servant, your devotee. I do not mind being born there, even as an insignificant creature like an insect. Why? Because in a devotee's house, they'll always be chanting and hearing Krishna Katha. So even as an insect, he'll be able to hear. So I don't even want liberation. I just want to be a devotee or associate with devotees. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said, Nadaram nadaram nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamani mama janamani janmani shre bhavatad bhakti aitukitai. O Lord of the universe, I do not desire material wealth, materialistic followers, a beautiful wife, or fruit of activities described in flowery language. All I want life after life is unmotivated devotional service to you. By saying life after life, janmani janmani, the Lord referred not to an ordinary birth, but a birth in which to remember the lotus feet of the Lord. Such a body is desirable. A devotee does not think like yogis and jnanis who want to refuse a material body and become one with the impersonal Brahman effulgence. A devotee does not like this idea. On the contrary, he will accept any body, material or spiritual, for he wants to serve the Lord. This is real liberation. So what does that mean? That means if one is engaged in Krishna's service, actually devotee, an actual Vaishnava, he is not in the material world. He is in the spiritual world. And that is the desire of a devotee. If one has a strong desire to serve the Lord, even if he accepts a material body, there is no cause of anxiety. Since a devotee, even in a material body, is a liberated soul. This is confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami. Iha yasya hare dasye kamana manasa gira nikalasa sphere avastis dasu jivan mukta su uchite. A person acting in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, in the service of Krishna, with his body, mind, intelligence, and words, is a liberated person even within the material world, although he may be engaged in many so-called material activities. The desire to serve the Lord establishes one as liberated in any condition of life, whether in a spiritual body or a material body. In a spiritual body, the devotee becomes a direct associate of the Lord. But even though a devotee may superficially appear to be in a material body, he is always liberated and is engaged in the same duties of service to the Lord as a devotee in Vaikuntha Loka. There is no distinction. It is said, sadva jivo va marova, whether a devotee is alive or dead, his only concern is to serve the Lord. Chakva deham puna janma naiti mameti. When he gives up his body, he goes directly to become an associate of the Lord and serve him, although he does the same thing even in a material body in the material world. So apitulyarta darshana, the devotee swagapavagana rakeshu, he sees all positions as the same. For a devotee there is no pain, pleasure or material perfection. One may argue that at the time of death a devotee also suffers because giving up his material body. But in this connection, the example may be given that a cat carries a mouse in its mouth and it also carries a kitten in its mouth. Did you ever see a cat carrying a kitten? Did you? Where?
I just saw now and again.
Okay. Next time you see, you bring it. So we can all see. So is the kitten afraid when the mother cat is carrying him? It carries him by this part here. Is the kitten afraid? No, because his mother's carrying him. But if a mouse is caught within the teeth of the cat, is the mouse afraid? Yes. Did you ever see a mouse caught? You've seen? Where? Your cat, Gopinath, used to catch lots of mice, if I remember. Mm-hmm. Were the mice afraid when they're caught? Oh, he was dead, so he was no longer afraid, but okay. Good point. But the perception of the mouse is different from that of the kitten. When a devotee gives up his body, Chakfadeham, he is ready to go back home, back to Godhead. Thus his perception is certainly different from that of a person being taken away by Yamaraj for punishment. A person whose intelligence is always concentrated upon the service of the Lord is unafraid of accepting a material body, whereas a non-devotee, having no engagement in the service of the Lord, is very much afraid of accepting a material body or giving up his present one. Therefore, We should follow the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mama janmani janmani shvare bhavadad bhakti rahe tiki toye. It doesn't matter whether we accept a material body or a spiritual body. Our only ambition should be to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Maharaj Nimi continues. I do not wish to accept a material body, for such a body is the source of all distress, lamentation, and fear. Everywhere in the material universe, just as it is for a fish in the water, which lives always in anxiety because of fear of death. So a fish is always afraid. Why? Because some bigger fish or a fisherman or some net may come and catch him and kill him. So this is what it is in the material world. It's always a fearful, anxiety-filled situation. Because the material body will perish. So this is Maharaj Nimi, so deeply realized. Prabhupada's purport. The material body, whether in the higher or lower planetary systems, is destined to die. In the lower planetary system or lower species of life, one may die soon. And in the higher planets or higher species, one may live for a long, long time. But death is inevitable. This fact should be understood. In the human form of life, one should take the opportunity to put an end to birth, death, old age, and disease by performing tapasya. This is the aim of human civilization, to stop the repetition of birth and death, which is called mrityu samsara vartmani. This can be done only when one is Krishna conscious, or has achieved the service of the lotus feet of the Lord. Otherwise, one must rot in this material world and accept a material body subject to birth, death, old age, and disease. What an expression! One must rot in the material world. We don't usually think of being in the material world and our fancy, strong, young bodies is rotting. But yet, if you don't bathe for 2 months, what will happen? No one will even talk to you or walk within 15 meters of you, because everyone will think you're rotten. And everyone will think, just the body begins to rot and you have to wash it, bathe it, to stop it from rotting quickly. Yes. The example given here, Prabhupada continues, is that water is a very nice place for fish. But the fish is never free from anxiety about death, since big fish are always eager to eat the small fish. And you see this also with the birds. You can see a bird, what is his greatest defense? How does he protect himself? He flies away. But does a bird ever stay in one place for a long time? Never. Even if he's on the top of a tree, he won't stay there for a long time. Because there's always danger, always fear. Why? Because he's afraid of some bigger bird or some other animal coming, a cat in the tree or some hunter. So he keeps moving because he's afraid. And when on the ground you see them, what are they? Always looking around, always looking around. Their eyes are like this, they're always looking, because they're in anxiety, and the fish too. So this is the very nature of being in a material body. So therefore Maharaj Nimi says that my situation in the material world is like a fish. Anxiety. Therefore you're asking me to accept a material body and I'm refusing. Falguni Tatra Mahatam. All living entities are eaten by bigger living entities. That is the way of material nature. Ahastani Sahastanam Apadhani Chatushpadam Falguni Tatra Mahatam Jiva Jiva Sajivanam. Those who are devoid of hands are prey for those who have hands. Those devoid of legs are prey for the four-legged. The weak are the subsistence of the strong. And the general rule holds that one living being is food for another. So very, very cynical view of the material world, of a material body, as opposed to a romantic view. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has created the material world. So who has done this? The Supreme Personality of Godhead has created the material world in such a way that one living entity is food for another. Thus, there is a struggle for existence. But although we speak of survival of the fittest, no one can escape death without becoming a devotee of the Lord. So no one is fit to survive in a material body. That's the actual truth. Harim vina naiva shutim taranti. One cannot escape the cycle of birth and death without becoming a devotee. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Prapyamam navartante mrityu samsara vatmani. One who does not attain shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna must certainly wander up and down within the cycle of birth and death. So the demigods replied to Maharaj Nimi saying, let Maharaj Nimi live without a material body. Let him live in a spiritual body as a personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And according to his desire, let him be manifest or unmanifest to common materially embodied people. So the demigods accepted Maharaj Nimi's concept of not again going back into the material body. Prabhupada's purport. The demigods wanted Maharaj Nimi to come to life. But Maharaj Nimi did not want to accept another material body. Under the circumstances, the demigods, having been requested by the saintly persons, gave him the benediction that he would be able to stay in his spiritual body. The term spiritual body is sometimes taken to refer to a ghostly body. An impious man who dies after sinful activities is sometimes condemned so that he cannot possess a gross material body of five material elements, but he must live in a subtle body of mind, intelligence, and ego. However, as explained in Bhagavad Gita, devotees can give up the material body and attain a spiritual body free from all material tinges, gross and subtle. Takvadeyam puna janma naiti mameti suarjuna. Thus the demigods gave King Nimi the benediction that he would be able to stay in a purely spiritual body free from all gross and subtle material contaminations. The Supreme Personality of Godhead can be seen or unseen according to his own transcendental desire. Similarly, a devotee, being Jivan Mukta, liberated soul, can be seen or not seen as he chooses. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Naham Prakasya Savasya Yoga Maya Samavrita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is not manifest to everyone and anyone. To the common man, he is unseen. Atasi Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grayam Indriyai. Krishna and his name, fame, qualities, and paraphernalia cannot be materially understood. Unless one is advanced in spiritual life, Sevan Mukhi Jivadao, one cannot see Krishna. Therefore, the ability to see Krishna depends on Krishna's mercy. The same privilege of being seen or unseen according to one's desire was given to Maharaj Nimi. Thus he lived in his original spiritual body as an associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Maharaj Nimi didn't have a son, and he left this world without a son. So who would be the next king? The sages had a plan. And this is what they did. Thereafter, to save the people from the danger of an unregulated government, the sages churned Maharaj Nimi's material body, from which as a result, a son was born, even though he wasn't there and the body was dead. The soul had left. They churned it in such a way, they knew this art, that a son was born from the dead body. The same was done to whom? Vena Maharaj. Yes. And who was born of Vena Maharaj? Pritu Maharaj, yes. Because he was born in an unusual way, the son was called Janaka. And because he was born from the dead body of his father, he was known as Videha. Because he was born from the churning of his father's material body, he was known as Matila. And because he constructed a city as King Mithila, the city was called Mithila. Where is Mithila? You have been? Where? Kottayam. Huh?
Nepal.
Is Nepal or North India? It's Nepal? Janakapur is same. And who is Mithila famous for?
Babubrahan.
That's Manipur. Okay. O King Prickett, from Mithila came a son named Udavasu. So now it's continuing with the sons of the sons of the sons of the sons. Udavasu, from Udavasu, Nandivardhan, from Nandivardhan, Suketu, and from Suketu, Devarata. From Devarata came a son named Briharata, and from Bhadrarata, a son named Mahavirya, who became the father of Sudriti. The son of Sudriti was known as Drishtaketu. From Drishtaketu came Hariasva. From Hariasva came a son named Maru, another Maru. The son of Maru was Pratipak, and the son of Pratipak was Kritarat. From Kritarat came Devamidha, from Devamidha, Vishruta, from Vishruta, Mahadriti. Even though there is such a wonderful, realized soul like Nimi Maharaj, still time continues. Still there is birth. Still people die. They live, they have their whole lives. They achieve something, and then they leave, and then their son comes and he achieves something and he grows old and leaves and his son. And in this way, material life continues for thousands and millions of years. So what is actually important in this life? What is insignificant? Practically speaking, everything is insignificant except other than what Prabhupada said about the devotional service of the Lord. Because that awards eternality to the soul. From Mahadriti was born a son named Kritarata. From Kritarata was born Maharoma. And Maharoma came a son named Svanaroma. From Svanaroma came Rasvaroma. From Rasvaroma came a son named Siradwaj, also called Janaka. When Siradwaj was plowing a field, from the front of his plow, the Shira, appeared a daughter named Sita Devi, who later became the wife of Lord Ramachandra. Thus, he was known as Shiradwaj. The son of Siradwaj was Kushadwaj, and the son of Kushadwaj was King Dharmadwaj, who had two sons, namely Kritadwaj and Mitadwaj. O Maharaj Prickett, the son of Kritadwaj was Keshidwaj, the son of Mitadwaj was Kandikya, because previously one of the other sons of Ikshaka was described, and Lord Ramachandra was born in that dynasty, and the other son of Ikshaka came Sitadevi. O Maharaj Prickett, the son of Kritadwaj was Kesidwaj, the son of Mitadwaj was Kandikya, the son of Kritadwaj was expert in spiritual knowledge, and the son of Mitadwaj was expert in Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. Kandikya fled in fear of Kesidwaj. The son of Kesidwaj was Banuman, and the son of Banuman was Satyadumna. The son of Satyadumna was named Suchi. From Suchi, Sanadwaj was born, and from Sanadwaj came a son named Urjaketu. The son of Urjaketu was Aja, and the son of Aja was Purujit. The son of Purujit was Ristanemi, and his son was Shutayu. Shutayu begot a son named Supavaksha, and Supavaksha begot Chitrarata. The son of Chitrarata was Chemadhi, who became the king of Mithila. The son of Chemadhi, he became the king of Mithila. He had a son, and he had to leave also. So one after another, this is the nature of the material world, and therefore Nimi says, I don't want a material body. I don't want a material body, because it means anxiety. Why? Because one never knows when one's time is going to come to leave the material world, to leave his body behind, and everyone is so attached to the body. So Nimi said, no. The son of Chemadi was Samarata, and his son was Satyarata. The son of Satyarata was Upaguru, and the son of Upaguru was Upagupta, a partial expansion of the fire god. The son of Upagupta was Vasvananta, the son of Vasvananta was Yuyuda, the son of Yuyuda was Subhasan, and the son of Subhasan was Shuta, the son of Shuta was Jaya, from whom there came Vijay, the son of Vijay was Ritta, the son of Ritta was Sunaka, the son of Sunaka was Vitahavya, the son of Vitahavya was Dritti, the son of Dritti was Bahulasva, the son of Bahulasva was Kriti, and his son was Mahavasi. Sukadev Goswami said, my dear King Parikit, and this is the final verse in this chapter, all the kings of the dynasty of Mithila were completely in knowledge of their spiritual identity. Therefore, even though staying at home, they were liberated from the duality of material existence. Prabhupada's purport. The material world is called Dvaita, or duality. The Chaitanya Charitamrita Antilila says, Dvaita Badra Badra Gyan Saba Mano Dharma E Bala E Manda E Saba Brahma. In the world of duality, that is to say, in the material world, so-called goodness and badness are both the same. Therefore, in this world, to distinguish between good and bad, happiness and distress, is meaningless, because both are mental concoctions, manodharma. Because everything here is miserable and troublesome, to create an artificial situation and pretend it to be full of happiness is simply illusion. The liberated person, being above the influence of the three modes of material nature, is unaffected by such dualities in all circumstances. He remains Krishna conscious by tolerating so-called happiness and distress. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Matra spashas to kanteya sitosna sukadugadaha agamapayeno anityas tams tikshas vabharata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception or seeing of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. Those who are liberated, being on the transcendental platform of rendering service to the Lord, do not care about so-called happiness and distress. They know that these are like changing seasons, which are perceivable by contact with the material body. Happiness and distress come and go. Therefore, a pandit, a learned man, is not concerned with them. As it is said, Gatasu nagatasum chan nanu so chanti pandita. The body is dead from the very beginning because it is a lump of matter. It has no feeling of happiness and distress. Because the soul within the body is in the bodily concept of life, he suffers happiness and distress, but these come and go. It is understood herewith that the kings born in the dynasty of Mithila were all liberated persons, unaffected by the so-called happiness and distress of this world. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 9th canto, 13th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Dynasty of Maharaj Nimi. So then, chapter 14 and 15, oh, that's a story. Urvasi and King Pururava. And then Lord Parsaram. And then King Jayati. Very interesting stories. Then the dynasty of Puru. And very, very quickly after that, we will hear, as we are moving to, about the dynasty in which Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, takes birth. And that's what this canto is moving towards. Reminding us of our actual eternal relationship with Krishna. And then in the 10th canto we shall hear, if Krishna allows, about the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whom we are meant to eternally associate with. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.